Danger Talk, Season 1, Episode 6. We got the one and only Ken Griffey Jr., the kid, swing man. He's here, right here on Danger Talk. Come join us. This episode of Danger Talk is sponsored by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app.
Welcome back to Danger Talk. I'm Jeff Dye, and we have Mr. Unlimited, Russell
Wilson. Unlimited, let's go.
Dude, you guys are 5-0 for the first time in Seahawks history. Man, how does that feel,
I am
man?
Fired up. It's bye week. I can't go anywhere. I'm taking COVID tests every day, but all I know is the Seahawks are 5-0, and I'm feeling good. You know what I mean? I'm feeling good. I can feel like I could dance around all night. So I got a few date nights this week, Jeff. You know what I mean? I'm feeling on a high right now.
This is what happens when you let Russ cook. He cooks, and that's what where does this rank as far as regular season games for you? I mean, it was a rough first half. You guys scored 21 points in what seemed like a 2 minutes right after. Weather was rough. I mean, the defense, you know, made a stand at the game, you know, went down on the wire in a game winner with 15 seconds left. Everybody had a heart attack. Everybody watching was freaking out. You guys have kept it real close and kept it. You've given us ulcers. I mean,
was one of the best games we've ever had, just in terms of, you know, the circumstances. It was pouring down, raining. It was windy. Ball was soaking wet, and just to come up with a huge, you know, stop on fourth and one by our defense. I mean, got to shout them out for just all the plays that, you know, big time plays they've made this season. And just in that moment right there in particular, fourth and one, just to give me a chance to go down the field. And sure enough, we went marched up and down the field. And then fourth and 10, DK Metcalf makes an unbelievable play. And just, he's been on it all year and just been locked in and in the zone. And it goes back to the work ethic. You can't replace the work ethic. And sure enough, fourth down and goal, he makes another great play. And we end the game and win the game. And so it was just amazing. The locker room was amazing afterwards, just the celebration, just the feeling, and everybody really being together. You know, we're in a special place here in Seattle, and we've got a special team. And it's because of the leadership and the guys that we have and just the team camaraderie. And one of my favorite parts of the game was watching Jamal Adams come down from the box up top, and he came down to the field just to at halftime and third quarter, the middle of third quarter or whatever, just to really get guys going and get guys fired up, because there's nobody in the stands. And he's such a passionate teammate and passionate player, and just those are the kind of things and people that we have. And I remember Bobby Wagner and I talking about just, you know, when we were down, you know, it was just, hey, we've been here before. And just, so those are the things that kind of level of focus and teamwork and everybody else, whether you're playing or not playing or whatever it may be, and guys making clutch plays like DK did, and he's been special all year. I think he's, you know, arguably the best receiver in football, you know, and how he's playing. And just, you know, we just got to stay the course. You know, we've got a long ways to go, and we just got to stay focused. But this week, we're celebrating. We got time to celebrate a little bit here in this bye week and recover and hang out and just be with the family. And, you know, normally I'd be in Mexico right now sitting in the sun here, Jeff Dye, but I'm sitting in rainy Seattle, and it's pouring down raining right now. But.
I love that. And I hate bringing up anything bad you do because you won the game, man. But after you threw the interception in the fourth quarter, sorry to bring it up, you still won, but you didn't know you had won the game yet. So after you threw the interception in the fourth, what did you tell the team?
Keep believing. You know, we made a mistake, and then boom, let's keep going. I mean, you know, and we've overcome so much before, and let's go do it again. And sure enough, we were able to. And just staying neutral, you know, not being too high, not being too low. You know, I'm such a big believer in being neutral, that neutral mindset. We talk about it all the time, and what we talk about with Limitless Minds, and, you know, and so it's so true, you know. And so, I think we have such a special team, like I said, everybody believes.
I love that. Last week, you got real comfortable. That's what I love about this podcast. We're getting to see the real Russell Wilson. And you said to Candace Parker, you admitted that you went to Wendy's after returning from Miami. Did you have any celebrations this week you'd like to tell us?
No, not this week. Not yet. Not yet. You know, I think, though, I did have actually, let me tell the full truth. So I got up. It was, I don't know, it was like 11 o'clock. Around 10 o'clock. I got home or whatever, whenever it was. Around 10 o'clock, we had dinner. Got home, celebrated with the fam and everything else. And then around 3 o'clock, I was starving. I was craving for that Wendy's cheeseburger again. I think it was just hitting me, but obviously it was closed, so I didn't go.
Nice.
But I got up and had some big old spaghetti pasta thing, and then had that. I was starving, man. After those games, you get so hungry because you use so much energy, and especially that kind of game where it's raining and you're running around throwing.
Yeah.
So I got a big old thing of pasta that I, you know, made, and then also too is you know, I had like a half of a Martinelli's thing. I just wanted to sit down there and just put in a wine glass and just sit back and just, you know, just soak it all in, you know. So, but now I'm back on my health kick now. That's okay for Sunday night, but then next thing you know, Monday, I got to get back on my groove.
We've been on a roll. We've been cooking. Russ is cooking, even on his podcast. But this week, I'm especially excited about our guest because I have been a huge fan of his. He is the Russell Wilson of baseball to me, but I knew him before I knew you, as far as like when I was a little boy growing up, and I know you was a big hero of yours when you were growing up. Why don't you bring
it up? Are you guys ready to go? You guys ready to roll? Our guest today is a dad to three, a 13-time All-Star, 10-time Gold Glover, 7-time Silver Slugger with 630 career home runs. He's a Hall of Famer, the kid, the one and only with the sweetest swing in Seattle, the sweetest swing ever in the game of baseball, the one and only Ken Griffey Jr., number 24. Griff, you there? Junior, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on? How are you? Yeah.
First of all, look at all them gold gloves in the background. What in the world?
Well, I tell everybody that King Tut is buried here himself.
I love it, man. I love it. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How many gold gloves you got, man, back there? All right there.
There's actually 12.
It's 12.
There's 12. There's 10 gold gloves, and then I got a gold glove for the decade and the top 50 best nine for the first 50 years that Rowling's had it. So there's actually 12 of them.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, Jeff Dye, you have any gold gloves?
I have no gold gloves, but Robin Ventura, I have one of his gold gloves because he keeps his in his attic. Went through a divorce, and now I go. That's a true story.
Huh? That's hilarious. you know, so first of all, you know, you grew up here, didn't you, Jeff Dye? You grew up in the Seattle area, didn't you?
Russ, I know we got Griffey, and I know we got you. And I'm here, of course, every week. But we have some special breaking news for you. We're recording right now. And a special announcement and a special guest to surprise you, Russ. Ladies and gentlemen, DK Metcalf. DK Metcalf is in the house.
Hey, what you doing?
Oh, Madden 99 Club. Okay.
My time to give you respect, right?
Hey, man, I hear you. What in the world? You just surprised me with this?
I know, man.
Hey, Junior. Come say what's up to Junior, man. We on the phone with the one and only King Griffey Jr. over here.
What's up, bro?
Hey, Junior, we just got the 99 Club, man.
Man, that is
DK
awesome.
DK just surprised me with this. That is awesome, man. He said, he said that's a lot of gloves back there. He's got more gloves. I love it, man.
Yes, sir. Nice meeting you, though.
Yes, sir. Nice meeting you. I'll be up there. See y'all.
Come see the game, man.
I can't wait.
For sure.
Yeah.
Hey, appreciate you, bro. Love you, homie. Yeah, couldn't do it without you.
Man, that is outstanding.
That is amazing. Y'all surprised me on Danger Talk with this? Hey, Danger Talk. That is perfect, man. 99 Club, let's go.
Hey, when it comes to Ken Griffey Jr., and I've said this on my own podcast, is that it goes God, Griffey, and then your dad. That's how it works. It's like Griffey's the highest Seattle thing. There's no one higher.
Absolutely
than
not.
I was able to carry the torch that, you know, the guys before me left the legacy, and I was just there at the right time, being, you know, 19 years old. Being a kid, so it was the perfect storm for me. It was, you know, a guy who could play, and I was young, so I was able to embrace the city, and the city embraced me, and it was pretty cool.
I love that. I definitely went.
You made baseball cool. You were like our Jordan. You were like our guy, the fun, cool, like, and you were set some swag, and you made it look fun, and like you were the Seattle guy.
Well, speaking of swag, I even have my own. I got my own Mariners hat right here. I'm gonna. I'm gonna flip it backwards just for this interview,
yes, man,
just to feel like you go.
Yes, there, sir.
I'm gonna rock this hat here, right? I'm ready to play ball today, you know. So
all right,
let's do this thing. So before we start hopping into just you know, your career and everything else, what are you up to right now? First of all, where are you right now? I'm
in Orlando. You know, I'm just chasing kids. You know, I got one in college, two out of college. The pandemic got us all hunkered down. So, you know, we still social distance. I try to tell my kids that I'm a social distance from them for a while, and they just start laughing because they're up under me all day. But, you know, everything's great. We just, you know, I get a chance to play golf, do a little boating and stuff like that. But, you know, it's the time that we're together that, you know, if it wouldn't have happened like this, who knows what would be going on. But, you know, we've had a chance to really get to know everyone, you know, as they're growing, what are their needs? You know, they're 26 and 25, well, soon to be 25 and 18. So, you know, we have to tell them that, you know, we parent the same. It's that each one of y'all are different.
Yeah.
So our methods may be a little different, but we're still parenting the same. But, you know, it's been great. I mean, you know, like I said earlier, you know, get called pops, old man, until my daughter says she wants something, then it becomes daddy. And I'm like, okay, whatever you want. And then my boys look at me like this, like, hey man, if we say those words, that ain't gonna happen. I'm like, mm-mm.
Nope. I feel the same way. I feel the same way with my daughter, Sienna. You know, as soon as she says, daddy, you know, you give her whatever she wants, you know. But
yeah, that ain't fair.
Yeah. You know how it goes.
You can't call the kid old man. You can't call Junior the old man.
I mean, I'm 50 now. So
you're the kid.
So, you know, that was really strange waking up this year going, I am 50 years old. I was like, wow.
obviously, you know, life after such an amazing career and everything else. And I remember last time I got to see you really was probably, were we in Vegas, Junior? We were in Vegas for Jeter's event, weren't we?
Jeter's golf event. Yep. That I try to go every year.
Yeah. It's always,
I try to get in as much golf as possible.
Yeah. That lefty swing, man, you know, you swing lefty golf too as well.
Yeah, sometimes it's a problem because I sometimes don't get my wrist around, mm-hmm. and baseball still is in me. So I sometimes hit it a little further left than I want it, but, you know, it's fun.
What's the furthest you've hit a golf ball?
Furthest I've hit a golf ball? Oh, like 420.
It's ridiculous. I think the furthest I've hit a golf ball, which is pretty far. I think I've hit a golf ball about 340, you know, so.
Yeah.
So, Junior, do you watch a bunch of football, or are you a big other, you know, other, outside of baseball, do you watch tons of football and all that, or what?
I watch football. Like we are a diehard football family. Mm-hmm. You know, football season comes on, we are, you know, football. Basketball season, you know, we'll watch probably 70 games. Football, we're, you know, Sunday is, you know, that's the day.
Yeah.
Now, if the Seahawks are looking for a 50-year-old wedge buster, call me. I ain't really doing that on Sunday morning.
You hear that, Seahawks fans? John Schneider, be careful. Junior's saying he's ready to play for us. He's ready to be the wedge buster for us. But so are you telling us you're a Seahawks fan? Is this our first true Seahawks fan?
We have Seahawks gear. Look, we have Seahawks. I think our Christmas card was, let's see, probably 4 or 5 years ago, that our entire family dressed up in Seahawks gear.
Okay, this is breaking news. Picture. Jeff Dye, tell him.
Junior, we've been waiting for this for 5 weeks. I've asked every guest, who's your football team? I love Russell. I love the Seahawks. I keep saying, hey, who's your team? And they've all been very honest, so good for them. But guess what? You're our first Seahawks. This is a victory for the Danger Talk podcast. You're our first Seahawks.
See, here it is. I got two teams.
Oh, yeah, I got two teams.
Now. Well, oh. I only got two teams. Okay.
All right.
And you know, one of them y'all beat a couple weeks ago.
Cowboys? Don't tell me the Cowboys, bro.
Yeah, but I'm an old school Cowboy.
You and Shaq.
Hold on, can I finish?
I'll let you finish because you're the kid. But
My uncle went to high school with Tony Dorsett.
Okay. No, all right.
So, and he said, hey, watch this kid. And I was, you know, and then he went to Pitt and then he got drafted by the Cowboys and, you know, but.
So there's a relationship there.
Well, I tell you what, I've gone to more Seahawk games in my life than Cowboy games.
Okay, yeah, we're good. We're set. We're set. The kid is officially a Seahawks fan.
Yeah, that's
we're good.
Seahawks fan.
Listen, we've had Shaq on the call. We've had,
now, you know,
it's a veteran.
We had Shaq on the call who was a diehard Cowboys fan and broke my heart. He was trying to talk all this trash before the game. He was our first episode of Danger Talk. He's talking all this trash, Junior, talking all this trash about what the Cowboys going to do to us and Zeke and this and this and that. I said, okay, well, let me know. When it's Cowboys week, let me know. We're going to talk some trash back and forth. And sure enough, we end up winning that game. So I've been texting Shaq, talking trash to him ever since. I've been in his head. So unfortunately, Dak got hurt, so I feel bad for him right now. I know that's unfortunate. That was ugly, man. I feel so bad for him. And,
yeah.
Which is a crazy situation. So,
you know, like as a fan, as a football fan, you know, when you guys go out there having a son who played, you know, was in the practice squad for the Steelers, having another little guy who is a cornerback in college. So, you know, we know the dangers of you guys going out there day in and day out. And, I don't think the fans really realize what it's like to wake up the next morning after being hit 40 times or, you know, so, you know, when they, you know, I got friends that, hey man, this looks easy. I'm like, all right, let's go out in the backyard. And then I sick tray on them and they're like, okay, never mind. It's not that easy. I'm going, no.
Well,
you know, you guys make it look easy. And, you know, people sometimes forget that this is what you've done since you were, you know, 5-6 years old is play this game.
Yeah. Well, being a Cowboys fan and watching that game and then watching, you know, Dak get hurt in that play, and the first thing that ran through my mind is, you know, just his career and everything that he's done so far and the success that he's had. And just thinking about this, you know, back and forth deal with, you know, being a quarterback and everything else and back and forth deal with the Cowboys and everything else. What's your thought on him having to play on the franchise tag, a guy who's had such a great career? Obviously you've been a fan of the Cowboys for a little bit. Obviously you're number one fan of Seahawks, but what's your thought of that whole process, man? It broke my heart to see that.
Well, I don't really, you know, for me, I don't really understand it because I've never gone through it. Mm-hmm. You know, when I came up, rookie salary was like $68,000. I think the second year I made $180,000. And then I signed a 2-year deal for 2.5. So they bought out my first year arbitration. And then we did a 4-year deal and then another 4-year deal and was traded at the end of the third year of the 4-year deal and then signed a 9-year deal. So I've never really had to go through, you know, that franchise tag or arbitration or anything else. So I don't really know how somebody would feel other than when people talk about it and, you know, it's a good thing or bad thing, you know, depending on the situation that they're in. Mm-hmm. Does Dak deserve a long-term deal? Absolutely. The things that he's done for himself and that organization, absolutely. With the salary contract, the salary cap, guys coming off the books, you know, can he get more money next year? Or is that what they're waiting on? They can, you know, instead of $31 million, they might offer him $39 million the following year. Nobody knows what goes on behind the scenes. We just hear about it like everybody else when somebody reports that, you know, they stopped talking to him and things like that. So I try to be optimistic and think that, you know, that the teams are doing things in good faith, not necessarily being vindictive towards the player, especially a guy of his caliber.
Yeah, I mean, I just – when I see a guy get hurt like that, man, it just breaks my heart because, you know, there's – you know, because he's going to be out probably for a year potentially. And just the process of that and, you know, he's played such good football. I felt like they should have, you know, found a way to make the deal work, you know what I mean? And just – so it's just – I know a lot of the players have been disappointed in the process, and just watching him, you know, be down and out for the count like that, man, just you could tell how passionate he was when everything happened. But, you know, going into your story here, you know, as you mentioned, you kind of didn't, you know, your kind of story has been a little bit different than maybe Dax or even mine, even, for example. You're a first round pick, number one pick overall, 1987 draft. I mean, what is it like to be picked number one overall? The whole process, obviously your dad played and everything else, and just, you know, obviously the Major League Baseball is so much different now in the draft process now compared to when you were drafted in 1987. But number one pick overall, what's the feeling like? What's the day like? Take me through that day.
Well, you know, prior to that December, Bobby Tolan came to the house. He said, hey, you know, who worked for the organization, and my dad and our families, well, the Tolan family and our families are really good close friends, and we consider each other family. He says, hey, Seattle's probably going to take you number one. And I happened to look at my dad and go, where is Seattle? And he started laughing because even as a junior in high school, you know, wherever he went, you know, he was with New York. So I just watched New York. If he was in Cincinnati, I was with Cincinnati. He was Atlanta, I was Atlanta. If he went West Coast, by the time the game start, we were going to bed. You know, it's funny because people look at it and go, well, you're a first round pick. You got everything, blah, blah, blah. I was a senior in high school, still going to bed at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
That we had bedtime, you know, this is how it was ran. There was no question. Homework here, you know, so we were still structured, even though I was a young senior, started out this my senior year at 16 and ended up turning 17 in November, and then being drafted, you know, in June. So the draft was June 4th. Actually, I take that back. The draft was June 2nd. June 2nd was the draft. June 3rd was my brother's birthday. June 4th, I graduated from high school. June 8th, I was in Seattle. June 16th, I played my first professional game.
Wow. And how fast did it take for you to get from that, you know, from getting drafted to the big leagues? What was the process like?
You know, just like anything else, if they let somebody play who is gifted, he's going to, you know, you let your athletes be athletes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to, if you're an athlete, this is what you do well. So I don't want to take that away from you. And that was the one thing that they said. They said, hey, we're going to let you play. And I went to A ball. I went 0 for 4, or 1 for 4 my first at bat. But like my first three hits were home runs in A ball. And then, And then I struggled a little bit. My mom came and saw me. And the funny story is that she goes, hey, I will not come see you ever again until you start hitting.
Mama said that. She told you straight up.
Right. And I think I end up.
She was an athlete too, wasn't it? She was an athlete too, right?
You know, I tell everybody, because she has the biggest trophy, and I have their trophies, my parents' trophies. So she has the home run derby trophy. So I tell everybody that we have four as a family, and my dad is not one of them. But, they just, you know, they let me be who I was. I think I went 20 for my last 57 and ended up raising my average to like 313 in A ball. And then they go, okay, he's ready to go to high A. You know, we want to see him with better competition. So I was in San Bernardino. I played 40, maybe 50 games there. I batted like 330, had like 20 stolen bases, 14 home runs. And I dove back to the bag, and I ended up having a small stress fracture in my lower back. Mm. So they sent me home. Now, when they sent me home, I was able to do things. And my dad called the Mariners like, hey, you're going to have to get him out of here. He driving me crazy. So they sent me to Double-A. They sent me to Double-A. And I rehabbed for 2 months before I played.
Yeah.
And I ended up playing, you know, probably less than 20 games there in double A. So 1989 comes around and they go, hey, we don't know where we're going to send you. We don't know if we're going to send you to double A or we're going to send you to triple A. We're just going to let you play and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the worst thing to do for a kid who wants to be in the big leagues is say, we're not going to say nothing to you. We're going to let you play.
Okay.
I got this. I think I had the most at bats at that time, but like 105 at bats in spring training. They just like, we're going to let you play. I think there was one particular at bat that they told me about that it was 0-2 count. I think it was against Rick Sutcliffe. And they said, I battled back 3-2, ended up walking. And they go, he's ready. And that's when they decided to keep me.
That was it. So you just played for a short period of time in double A, just for a minute as you were recovering there, right? Did you ever play in double A? You just went there just to recover. So you just went from, I mean, that's amazing, man. I think about my minor league story. It looks a lot like that, Junior. It looks a lot like that. No, I'm just playing.
here's the thing. Like, for me, defensively, at age 14, I knew I could play in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And people go, at age 14, how do you know that you could play in the big leagues? Well, I go to spring training. I'm running down major league fly balls. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the adjustment was to learn how to hit.
Yeah.
To go from aluminum bat to wooden bats. Mm-hmm. It wasn't defensively. You know, defensively, it was like, okay, he's out in the outfield, like in the backfields during spring training. And Levi jeans and a t-shirt running down fly balls that, you know, Eddie Murray's hitting, dad's hitting, Dave Winfield, Roy Smiley, you know, all these guys are hitting balls. And I'm like, okay, what? We're just shagging, having fun.
That's all we're doing.
But he's looking at me.
Junior,
going,
you said you're
– go ahead.
You said your first hits were homers. So Russ, what was your first three professional hits?
I don't
even
remember if I got hits my first three at-bats, but I think I had a double. I think I had a double.
Really?
I think I had a double base hit, and I think another base hit were my first three. But Junior, you were saying, what about your dad though?
I just curious.
He was that he knew, he was like, at 14, he told me, he said, you're going to be better than me. He said, you're already better than me.
At 14.
Yeah, that's fascinating, man.
I mean, all my life, you know, while playing baseball, I was always one of the youngest but tallest. But I was, you know, my mom had to bring my birth certificate to every game. The coach had to keep a copy because they're like, there's no way this kid is this young and head and shoulders better than everybody on the field.
Yeah.
So that I had to prove it day in and day out. And so I had a little chip on my shoulder that if I'm going to do it, I might as well wear people out.
Yeah, well.
And so I just had that mindset that I'm going to wear you out every time because you automatically doubt my age and who I am.
Well, your relationship with your dad, obviously, you know, sounds like it impacted you in such a big way. And I think about, you know, how, you know, you're out there shagging. That's the other advantage that you had just besides your God-given talent that you had already. You're also around big leaguers every day, you know, and playing and shagging balls, you know, for Dave Winfield and your dad and stuff like that. And I think about when you're 18, 19 years old, you get to go to the big leagues and everything else and the process of once you finally get there, you know, talking about this, one of the greatest moments, I believe, in sports history, you know, but you guys going up to bat and hitting back-to-back home runs with your dad. I mean, what's that feeling like? How old was your dad at that time and how young were you that day?
39. My dad was 39, mm-hmm. and I was 20. Funny thing is the week before that, like the week before he was able to sign with the Mariners, he said, hey, there's a chance that I could become a Mariner. And he was like, hey, this is your team. Would it be okay? And I'm like, why wouldn't it be okay? You know, like he's asking me, you know, the son, like, hey, is it okay if I come play with you? And I'm like, yeah, this would be great. Not knowing the history, what would it mean? Because we've already played in the big leagues at the time, not on the same team. So we get to we get to play, and he batted second, I batted third, and I said, for 17 years you protected me, I finally get to protect you.
That's so dope.
He starts laughing. Well, then he goes, all right, let's make a bet. I go, what's the bet? He goes, first person that gets a hit, the other person has to pay for lunch. I go, okay, but if you get a hit, I get a chance to tie. So he singles, and I'm like, oh, but before that, I'm yelling, let's go, Dad. Come on, Pops, get a hit, Dad. And people in the dugout are laughing because they go, it's the first time we've ever had somebody say, let's get a hit, Dad, and actually mean it. Because, you know, legit. You get a certain age, you start getting fossil.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah. You know, you get all those, but gray beard, you know. So, and I was like, hey, let's go, Dad, get a hit. And I turn around and our whole dugout is cracking up. So he gets a hit. I get a hit. We run to the outfield and we're tossing. And he tells me to come here. And I go, what? He goes, I just want to know, the further that you got away from me, the younger you looked. As you got up to me, you're like, this is my son. He's a grown man. But he said, it was like I was tossing in the backyard with my 12-year-old son. And now I'm looking at him going, as he's walking to me going, this is him. He's a grown man now. What do I do? And I'm like, I just go, hey, Dad, I'm just happy that you're still playing and we get to do this together. Because all the time that you didn't see me play, it's making up for it. You get to have a front row seat to watch me play. Because it's tough. I mean, not, you know, growing up, you know, Saturday and Sundays, you know, my dad was somewhere, you know, in the country playing baseball, and every dad is sitting there. So it was tough growing up. You know, people yelling and screaming at me. Like my mom is the boss. You know, she didn't take anything. I remember I was pitching. And now I put a disclaimer on this one. I was pitching, and I had a lady on the other team just wearing me out. I'm 12 years old. Like, she was like, you're not as good as your dad. You're this, you're that. And And my mom stood up and looked at me and said, hit the batter. So I drilled the batter.
Dang.
My mom turns around, looks at the lady, looks dead at the lady, and said, I haven't hit the next one if you don't shut up.
Oh, mama. So, mama was feisty. I like it. Mama's a competitor.
Yeah.
She wanted a little chin music.
Yeah. So 20 years later, actually, it was like 25 years later, I actually met the kid that I hit. He was at my cousin's house.
That's amazing.
But she was, you know, she didn't take anything, you know, just because, you know, people think because we're professional athletes that our kids deserve to be talked about or yelled at. And my kids want to be kids like your kids.
Yeah.
They didn't ask to be born in this world. They didn't ask for anything but to be a kid. And sometimes adults take advantage of thinking it's funny or they deserve to be talked to. And I'm like, no, because if I were to come yell at you or yell at your kids, you would be upset. And they're like, yeah. I said, so why are you doing it to mine? Mm-hmm. You know, why are you, you know, trying to rattle? Well, that comes with the territory. No, there's what territory? I didn't see a line that said, I can yell at your kids or you should yell at my kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, I understand it's a competitive world. I understand that people think that, you know, they feel they can say whatever they want. But, you know, when it comes to a kid just trying to be a kid and fit in and how hard it is for kids to fit in nowadays, let them fit in and let them be kids.
Well, when I think about your legacy in Seattle in particular, obviously you came to Seattle. You're so young. You come all the way, you know, you get there and just experience, obviously, you running out to the field with your dad, like you told that story about you and your dad and how you said you looked younger as the further you got away. And just those funny, you know, kind of moments and those real moments too as well. And you guys hitting back-to-back home runs together. Besides your dad, who else did you look up to when you played the game of baseball? Is there somebody you emulated that you were like, man, I want to be like that guy? Was there somebody in particular that affected your world besides your dad?
No, it was, I, we were talking about this a couple of days ago. And I was fourth grade. Mm-hmm. I was in the fourth grade and I did a talent show. And I did the Cincinnati Reds batting order. And my dad happened to be there. And after the show, he gets in the car. He says, "Hey, don't do that again." I go, "What?" He goes, "Don't imitate anybody. Be you." Mm. All those names are taken.
Don't imitate anybody. Be you. I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've always lived by that. Just be me. All those other names have been taken. I can't be Joe Smith. I can't be, you know, anybody else. So, you know, I'm George Kenneth Griffey Jr. So that's.
I love it, man.
What I said that. And I mean, he said that. And I try to live by that. Now, I will imitate people just as jokes, but I will not do it, you know, in real life. I try to have my own style. When you talk about the swag and stuff, what's really funny is people like, you know, you disrespected baseball early. You had your hat backwards. I was like, no, my dad had a fro and I wanted to wear my dad's hat, but the bill of the hat kept hitting me in the face. So I just turned it around. All I want to do is wear my dad's stuff. People do it all the time. You come home, what do the kids do? They wearing your dad's shoes, mm-hmm. you know, the dress shoes. They got the shirt on. They got the tie on. You know, mine was just my dad played baseball. And I didn't really understand who my dad was until like I was in the eighth grade. When somebody said, "Your dad plays for the Yankees." I was like, yeah. I was like, doesn't everybody's dad do that? Like it, because my dad never came home. He never came home and talked about sports.
Yeah.
He still doesn't. Like we'll watch a game together and he'll just like, And I go, "What does that mean?" He goes, And I go, it's tough because he, you know, when you play, you don't talk about the sport that you're in. You'll talk about everything else.
It's so true. Yeah.
But you won't talk about the sport that you're in. And you know, if your kids have questions, then we'll talk about it. But, you know, and I know this probably happened to you, Russ, but when Melissa and I started dating, all the questions that she was asking me about baseball, why is this guy this? Who's this? How come you, when you get pulled out, you can't come back in? How come? I was over there like, oh, my God.
Well, it's funny because, you know, for Sierra, one of our first few dates that we went to, we actually went to a Mariners baseball game. And she's a sports fanatic. Like she loves basketball. She loves football. She loves watching sports at all. She didn't know much about baseball. She's watched it, but I had to explain to her, you know, like the different things about the on deck circle and this, and you know, she knew about the three outs but she didn't know about double plays and all that stuff. And so I had to kind of describe to her. Now she gets it. Now every time you watch baseball, she's on it. Like she's on every detail and every little thing. And
oh yeah,
she gets it all. But I had to explain it all. And football, I don't have to. Sometimes she'd be asking me all the questions, but she already knows. She already knows the answer. But why'd y'all do that?
Oh yeah, I get that too.
So now I got that too. And now I got to explain to her, well, this is what we were thinking, but no, that don't make no sense. But that whole,
you want
to
watch film with me?
Like when I'm watching film after a game, she's like, let me see that play. I want to see that play again. So she wants to watch plays. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh no, she just wanted to watch the highlights.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, she loves the highlights for sure. Yeah. She loves the highlights for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, it took my wife probably about 4 months. Mm-hmm. And then the questions were like, "Hey, how can they pulled you in the seventh inning when y'all were down by 8 runs?" I was like, "Cause we were down by 8 runs." Did he do that all the time? No. He just figured that 8 runs, we got a day off tomorrow. Give me a breather.
Yeah. Well,
okay, but can you
go
back in? No, I can't go back in. Once I'm out of the game, out of the game. How come in basketball they can call timeout and he can go back in? I'm like, oh.
Well, speaking of the kingdom and speaking of some of these highlights and stuff like that, and I know Jeff, you were you've been in Seattle. You got to see, I think you got to see Junior play, didn't you, Jeff? Did you get to see him play?
I saw Junior a bunch of times. In fact, he threw a ball to one of my friends in the center field on the same game that you broke your wrist, the same game.
Oh, May 25th or 26th or something like that.
Yeah, we were young boys. It was like the, I mean, we watched you all the time. We would go and wait for you to come out the little thing, but you drove underneath. We couldn't get you. We couldn't get an autograph.
Well, what's crazy about that, actually, speaking of autographs, is I actually have a ball from you. I didn't get it autographed, but I had a ball from you when I was in seventh grade. I actually went down to spring training down in Sarasota, Bradenton, Florida. And you were playing for the Reds at the time. And funny thing is, they put you in right field that game just for fun or something like that. And the ball goes down the line. And I was kind of there, and you literally looked right at me, and you were like, "You know what?" And I tried to play it cool. You know, you're my favorite. I was like, "Oh no, I'm cool like that. No, just give it to him." And you threw the ball to somebody else, and one of my teammates, whose name is Evan Ockletree, he hits me in the back of my head. He's like, "Man, what the hell are you doing? Man, that's Ken Griffey Jr." He said, "Don't ever do that again." And so sure enough, the next inning, the ball comes down. Okay, you make a sweet catch on the side, and you actually flip the ball to me. And you're like, "You want it?" And I'm like, yeah, give it to me. And you flip the ball, and I'm not sure if I still have the ball, but I had that ball for the longest time. I think I lost it when I was transitioning from NC State to Wisconsin. I had this ball for the longest time, for the next like 10 plus years of my life. I had this baseball. I think somebody may have taken it, honestly. But somebody jacked me. But you know, the coolest thing was that I remember in that moment being in seventh grade, looking at my favorite athlete, looking at the person I really admired. And, you know, you're talking about imitation. I used to imitate. I used to put my hat backwards and try to swing like.
Yeah, but see, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine. But see, now you got your own style, and you got thousands of kids wanting to be you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You did it your way. Now, I do have a question. When you were at NC State, what was the big game that you won?
Man, ooh, that's a good question.
On the road.
You know, one of the biggest moments, the biggest game that we won was actually against Florida State.
I was at that game.
We played at home, I think, of that game. We also played at Florida State on the road, which was a big game too.
Yeah.
And that both of those games were some of
the one that you won at Florida State.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was there.
Oh, that's crazy.
Oh,
you came to that game, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. My business partner, is a big Florida State fan. He was like, "Hey," he said, "I'm gonna fly you up and you're gonna watch the game with me." I'm like, "Okay." Because think about what's crazy. Like when you're in Florida, you know, you hear about Miami and Florida. You know, you very seldom hear about Florida State because, you know, we're an hour and 15 minutes from Gainesville. So all you hear about is Gator Nation. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Hey, I'm, you know," he's a big Florida State fan. I was like, "All right, yeah, let me go up there." And I think you guys came back.
It was a great game. Like I think it was me and Christian Ponder going back and forth, an epic game. I just remember, I think I threw five touchdowns that game. I think it was a good one.
Yeah.
I think it was a good one. And
I just remember walking out of his box going, "Damn." And because he's mad as hell.
Yeah,
I'm over there. You know, and you're probably like me a lot, that you don't really root for teams. You root for certain people that you know. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when I see somebody I know, I stop and watch the game. You know, like I said, we have a slushy machine downstairs that on game day, it is blue and green.
There we go. He's a devout Seahawks fan.
And she wears her jersey, but it says Miss Swingman, but it's got number 3 on the back.
I love it. So speaking about, you know, Seattle and just everything that you meant to the Seattle legacy, and I think about kind of, you know, my life and where I am today, and I think about just, you know, the legacy that I want to live, you know, leave here in Seattle too as well. It's just this one that's like never been done before besides you. And I think that you've, you know, surpassed every goal possibly imaginable. You've done so many amazing things and you played in the kingdom. You did these special things where you just rocked the kingdom all the way from Virginia, from young kid from Richmond, Virginia. They used to watch you and Alex Rodriguez make plays. And I think about just how much Seattle's changed from when I got here in 2012 and how much it's changed to now today and what the Seahawks mean. And just, I think about legacy. Can you talk to me a little bit about legacy and what it means to you and just what it means to you? Obviously there's Seattle legacy, but just legacy as a whole too, as well. And, you know, and also just how Seattle's changed in your perspective too, as well, because of you.
To me, when I got there, and I'll start off when I got there, there was 4,000 people in the stands. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, you know, it was, hey, let's go to the baseball game because we got nothing to do. And when you're in last place as many times as they were prior to me arriving there, you know, it makes it tough. But you start getting guys that have the same goal. And everybody says, well, it's the front office. It's just the guys in that locker room that make the team. Because mm-hmm. nobody knows what the ownership looks like.
Yeah.
You know, the Seahawks could have, you know, 40 owners, you know, from small, medium, and large. It's the same thing with the Mariners. The same thing when the Sonics were there. but it's the guys that they can fall in love with. And Jay, Edgar, Alex, myself, Randy, you know, and prior to that, I had guys like Dave Valley, Alvin Davis, Harold Reynolds, Jim Presley, Mickey Brantley, that took me under their wing and weren't jealous of a 19-year-old kid. They actually wanted me to do well. Where you see nowadays that somebody's jealous of somebody for getting this or getting that. Well, go out and work for it. Mm-hmm. If that person can get it, obviously you can get it. It's an unobtainable goal. And so when we talk about the legacy part, you just want to leave a place better than when you got there.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing. You know, try hard to not fall in some of the pitfalls and do the wrong things, but you know, things happen, life gets in the way, something happened. But you know, having, you know, a good background, with my mom and dad, understanding, hey, this is the right way to do things, the wrong way. You know, if you want to be in the big leagues, this is what you got to do. So I understood that at an early age, but the legacy is just, you know, having guys and I was around, you know, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Willie Stargell, you know, Dave Winfield, Ricky Henderson, all these guys were at my house. You know, it's funny. I'll tell you a quick story before I get sidetracked again is, Barry Bonds was at my house and my mom cooked for him on a Thursday night. They had a three game series. My mom cooks for him. He hits 5 home runs in 3 days.
Mom was cooking.
My mom comes in there and says, and that's when they had to do, you know, play each other like 3 times a year. My mom said, you will never, ever get food until you leave. It will be waiting for you on the bus. You can wear out the next team, but you are not wearing out this team no more. And he was looking at it. And so, these are the things that I learned. So, you know, Bo Jackson and Frank Thomas, when they came into town, they would say, hey, man, could you know, is Melissa cooking? I'd be like, yeah, what y'all want? And they give out an order. So one day, Frank was at first, and Bo wasn't doing anything. So I brought the food in. Now I brought a 12-pound turkey, macaroni and cheese, greens, and everything else. Like it was Thanksgiving.
Mama was cooking.
4 o'clock. So Frank calls me after the game. Hey, man, where the food at? I was like, man, I dropped that off at 4 o'clock. Yeah. Bo ate a 12-pound turkey to himself while the game was going on.
Unreal.
But these are the things that you know, nowadays guys don't do. They don't understand it. And these are the things that I learned from the guys before me. And I think that's the difference, the disconnect some, you know, the younger kids have is they don't receive information sometimes real well. And they think that somebody's out to get them. And in reality, you know, to me, I've made my money. I'm trying to help you make your money. You know, on the end of, I had to tell a kid, you know, at the end of my Hall of Fame speech, it won't mention your name. It'll just say, it'll be about what I did. And what I'm trying to do is help you out. I'm not trying to get you to do something that I don't think you're capable of doing. I'm trying to give you as much information, the information that I received at an early age, and pass that knowledge on to you so you can use it to your advantage. Now, whether you take it or not, I'm still going to do that. And, you know, and that's the thing. I've never been called a bad teammate. You know, that's, you know, that's one of my biggest achievements, is not to be that guy. You know, when one guy does it, we all do it. You know, now I've been a little vocal about certain things that I didn't like, but it was for the good of the team. It wasn't for me, Ken Griffey Jr. It was, you know, what's best for, you know, our guys and what we're trying to do.
You know, well, I love the fact that, you know, also part of your legacy was the part that means the most to you is being a good teammate and passing on that, because you had guys like you mentioned that meant so much to you, like, and people that came in even to your house, like Hank Aaron and such, that were around you, you know, just like, I can't even imagine just that experience of what that was like growing up with such amazing, amazing, you know, Willie Mays coming into the house and just what that means. And who had the biggest impact, you know, just for, as you're coming up and you think about guys like that, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, who would you say had the biggest impact, not just on you, but also your dad? Last week is in the books. Now it's time to review the tape and prepare for this week. There's no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. To add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs. If you haven't tried DraftKings yet, head to the App Store now, because you don't want to miss this. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, pass, and catch means more with DraftKings. It's simple. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at millions of dollars in prizes. If you haven't signed up yet, what are you waiting for? Get in touch with the game. Get ready. Let's go. Get off your couch. Let's roll. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app now and use code DANGERTALK for a limited time. New users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. Don't miss out on the week 6 action. Enter code DANGERTALK to get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. That's code DANGERTALK, only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for detail.
The biggest impact on my dad would be Willie Stargell.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest impact other than my dad would be Ricky Henderson for me.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's why you were 24, right?
No, I actually hit 14 home runs and 10 home runs in summer ball and just added those two numbers up. That's how.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The rumor is that it's because Ricky Henderson.
No.
That's the rumor. Mm-mm. So then we're clearing it straight, right?
Yeah. No. But Ricky talked to us. I mean, Willie Randolph, you know, the Yankee organization, the guys down there, the players were unbelievable, you know. You know, and Ricky went out of his way to, I shot baskets with Ricky when I was 12 years old. He made one, jumped in his car and took off before it hit net. And he still won't play me today. He said, well, you've grown and you're a little big and I don't want to mess with you. But, you know, those are the things that, you know, people remember for the rest of their lives. You know, it's not, you know, what I did. It's what I can do to help somebody else. That's the most important thing. If I can help somebody achieve their goal, you know, what do we do as parents? We try to make enough money to make the transition easier for your kids. Not that you want to give them everything, but you want to make sure that, hey, they have a head start on life. You know, when it comes to coaching, you know, I don't know everything about football, but I have friends who play, you know, and, you know, Ricky Waters, Thurman Thomas, who lived right around the corner from me, they were there. My daughter played basketball. Antonio Davis and Dee Brown were her coaches.
Huh.
You know, so, you know, I didn't sit there and coach. You know, what's funny is the only time I coach my kid is Pop Warner football. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a quarterback and I was the offensive coordinator, but never called his play because I have to worry about, you know, am I playing daddy ball? Where if somebody calls their son's play, nobody even cares. But because it's me, I've got to be conscious of what the other people think. So I never called his play in 3 years that I coached him. You know, I let the head coach do it, and he was like, hey, we're running this. I was like, all right, you call it in. And I turn away. You call it.
Talk to me about this 1995. Go back to 1995. It's one of the best days in history, Mariners history. I mean, you know, we just celebrated, I think, the 25th anniversary of the double. You know, so what's it looking back? What's it like looking back at all that in that moment 25 years later? And can you walk me kind of through that and what you remember and how that went?
I was home.
Also, I was there.
I was home for like 73 days. Shattered wrist. I had a plate and 9 screws put in it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we get to, you know, at the end of the year and, you know, the guys, you know, Dan Wilson, you know, Alex, Mike Blowers, Jay, Edgar, Joey, they all hung in there.
Darren Bragg.
Yeah. You know, we all, they all contributed. And, you know, I got one game rehab in my entire career. Mm-hmm. And right before I went to play, I had to go down. They were like, hey, we're going to drive to Tacoma. We're going to see you back. So I go in there. I take 3 at-bats, jump in my, I think I had a Mustang at the time, drive home. And I charter a plane to Minnesota. So the team doesn't even know. I show up at the ballpark like I'm ready. Lou was looking at me like, what are you doing here? I was like, I'm ready to play. He was like, So they didn't play me that night, but they played me the next night. Yeah. I was like, I ain't going back there. I ain't doing this no more. I ain't going back to do
it. So plane got there. Okay.
Yeah. And so they started playing. I started playing. I started feeling, getting comfortable. It took me a couple games to get comfortable. You know, they gave me don't check swing, don't dive. What do you think I did the first week? Check swing and dive. But it's tough. I mean, you know, you play one way. It's hard to tell somebody to not play a certain way, which they're accustomed to doing. If you, you know, it's just hard. And I've had plenty of conversations with coaches and managers. Even my dad was like, hey, stop diving for balls. I'm like, then I don't want to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, the part of the game is the will to make a play. I want to make that play. I'll worry about the consequences after, but I want to make that play. And that was my mindset throughout my career was, especially defense, was I can make this play. Mm-hmm. I want it to be, if you think about hitting it to center, you automatically know it's an out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people don't have that mindset. They're like, oh, I got to get my offensive numbers up. You know, my offensive numbers is this, my offensive. Mm-mm. For me, it was, I want to go out there. Yeah, I wanted to inflict as much damage as I could at the plate, but I also wanted you to look out there and go, let me try to hit it somewhere else.
I love that. Wow. You wanted to play amazing defense. That's why you got all those gold gloves. And that was kind of the leading thought process in your mind, knowing that, you know, your energy on defense and your spectacular plays, robbing home runs. And we, you know, just so you know, we show highlights. We show Ken Griffey Jr. highlights in our Seahawks meetings, you know. So just so you know, we show some of the greatest athletes of all time. Coach Carroll just puts a vision in us, and you know, every week. And a lot of times you're on there making amazing plays. And so, you know, I know you mean a lot to just not just me, but my teammates too, and just how you played the game. So, all, you know, full speed.
Yeah. I think what's funny is that I don't know who's madder, you know, when you guys don't win. I don't know if it's you guys or us as a family. Cause like we have days where we just look at each other like, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Like my friends are calling me, talking about, they'd start teasing. Like they know, like, you know, you know, from the, you know, me, like one of the biggest achievements is being able to do the 12th man. Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, being in that type of atmosphere, people don't realize how important that is. You know, they just think, hey, yeah, we're just going to go to the game. But to have that type of energy from the start of the game to the end of the game, you don't get tired. You know, as a player, you don't get tired. Now, the other team get tired of hearing it. But as a home team, you don't get tired. You like, yes, we can do this all the time. When there's 4,000 people on the stands, you're like, oh, man, we playing here. But when you have it packed and it's noisy, and I was actually one week I was in Seattle. I was doing something. I just got there. It was a Sunday night game. And I was driving past, and it was so loud. I got to the hotel room. I checked in, and it was at either the Thompson or the Olivet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still so loud down there. I was like, and I had the game on. I was like, am I hearing it through the TV or is I'm hearing it through this window?
You probably so hearing it from the window.
And I was like, I did. It was, I was like, oh my. So it was like, that's what sports is about. It's rooting your guys on, you know, no matter what happens, the outcome is seeing, you know, the 11 guys on offense, 11 guys on defense, the five up and down and the nine out there on the field, you know, representing your city.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And when people start, you know, you're a Seattle fan in Virginia, you know, I got Seattle fans in Tampa, Florida. And that's, you know, when you start going multi-states away from you, that means a lot. You know, when you go in there and you see somebody with a jersey on, you're like, okay, he represents, he knows what's up. And you look for that and you feed off of that as players. And, you know, people don't see that. They just think, hey, I represent. No, we like that just as much as you do.
Well, that's one of my favorite things about traveling the road is when we went on the road and we played in London, when we go down to Florida, we played in, you know, Miami the other day, and there's about 4,000 people there probably. And it's a lot different, 4,000 people in a football stadium. But, you know, not that many people there. And they're wearing Seahawks jerseys, number 3 jerseys. There's nothing cooler than that, knowing that they're, you know, I got your Griffey jersey upstairs, you know. So it's like those kind of moments and those feelings, there's nothing cooler and more special than that, knowing that as a player and knowing that you have fans all over the world and how you've impacted the game. And I want to talk about the current Major League Baseball playoffs right now. Who you think is going to win? Talking about just bringing baseball back and the fun again, just seeing the game. But who you think is going to win this Major League Baseball, you know, playoffs right now?
Ooh, well, Tampa's playing really well. I think they got a 2-0 lead. The Dodgers have their work cut out for them. But I think, you know, that would be a pretty interesting series between the Dodgers and Tampa.
Yeah, it hurt my heart when I saw Tampa beat the Yankees. And that was a tough game, man. I for sure thought the Yankees were going to pull it off.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I root for Booney because, you know, he was a teammate of mine. And, you know, I still talk to him every now and then. When he got the job, he was like, I called him and said, congratulations. He said, you want to be a hitting coach? I was like, ooh. Nah, I'm good.
That's a good team to be a hitting coach for. That's for sure. The Yankees, those guys, man, watching Stanton like hit home runs and just watching how Judge hits the ball so dang far. Talking about home run derbies and how far those guys hit the ball. I remember when I was growing up, and Jeff, you probably remember too, but when I was growing up, and I just remember watching home run derbies and watching you flip your hat backwards and all the home runs you hit, and just that 1993. Yeah, that 1992 home run derby and what you did.
I lost that one.
Yeah, I know, but that was a pretty special one. But what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I lost that one.
Which ones did you win? You won 3, right?
Pittsburgh.
You still got a record of Canada.
Colorado and Boston.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are special home run derbies. But what I was going to ask you is not just the home run derbies, but how you guys used to hit the ball back in the day. Like, the ball used to go 500 and some feet. I feel like nobody hits the ball like that, man. Like
No. The guys hit the ball a little further down.
Yeah, you think so?
The two guys on the Yankees hit it further than anybody that I've seen hit it.
Yeah, I mean,
we had a guy Adam Dunn.
Hey, Chris.
I didn't hit very many.
Yeah, the big donkey. Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask you.
Adam Dunn, William O'Pena. There's certain guys that, you know, they just hit a ball that is not fair. You know, there's been times where I've been second base and I think Willie Moe hit one and I just turned around. And the next time that I turned, he was like, hey, could you start running? Because I wanted to see where it land. But these guys, you know, they hit the ball so hard. And, you know, as a hitter, you know, the guys, you know, pitching is a little different. You know, the bullpen, these guys come in throwing 95 to, you know, 100. So timing wise, it wouldn't be that hard if, you know, it's not, you know, a guy throwing 80 and then you got a 90 guy and then maybe a 95 guy. Everybody in the bullpen throws 95. So once you get to that point of timing 95, you can pretty much hit. And you just have to stay off the ball that's, you know, belly button high. Anything above your belly button, you've got a 30% chance of hitting it. You know, but in, you know, you got to make them get the ball down. And but I like the Dodgers and Tampa for my picks. Not that I'm rooting against Atlanta. I think they got an unbelievable pitching staff. I just, you know, if you look at who has the better team, it's the Dodgers. Who has the better pitching? It's pretty much neck and neck. And Tampa is just playing with a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, you can tell. You can tell they've been playing great in crucial situations too. They've been coming up with timely hitting and everything else, and all that.
But they've done it all year.
Yeah, they have. What has been your thought process on, you know, what happened with Houston, you know, in the past couple of years and everything else and that whole process? How do you view that thought?
How do I view it? If, you know, if they cheated, they cheated. Nobody, you know, they have evidence. They don't have evidence. I'm not in their clubhouse. I don't know. But just based on what I hear, it's unfortunate because that's a black eye to, you know, sports, you know, not just baseball, but to sports in general. And, you know, right now, they're in the playoffs. You can't deny it.
Yeah, they've gotten there.
They got there. They're playing. And they're playing pretty well up until, you know, a couple games ago. But, you know, it's tough because you want to believe the guys, you know, but the evidence shows that something else happened. So you want the people to be punished that need to be punished, and the guys who don't. But, you know, if you cheated, you know who you are. If you, you know, you're only cheating yourself. The issue I think a lot of guys have is that there are a couple pitchers who are not pitching today because they pitched against Houston and they're not in the big leagues anymore. Mm-hmm. Because of that situation, you know, the ERA is like 14 against them. And so they don't have a job. That's the guys that, you know, you feel sorry for.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, trying to make, you know, livelihood and find out that it's not true.
Do you, going back to when you played and all that, and just think about the steroid, you know, era and all that, there's so many people that were doing it. This is reality. A lot of guys were doing it, but I think more so without necessarily names or anything like that, but I think more so, do you think that guys should be in the Hall of Fame if they've breaking these crazy records, you know, more home runs than this person or that person, just all the things they've done, or even pitchers too, some of the best pitchers in the world, you know, do you think those guys in the steroid era should be able to have, you know, what's your thought process on them being getting in the Hall of Fame? Should they have an asterisk by their name, or what's your thought?
Most of the people that being talked about were Hall of Famers prior to all these allegations.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of people who didn't fail drug tests. It is what it is. You know, for me, I was, you know, my dad said, you're not the biggest, you're not the strongest, you're not the fastest. Just don't let somebody outwork you. And nobody needs to see you work. So when you go into, you know, the clubhouse, the weight room, Nobody needs to sit there and monitor you. You know what you did, whether it was right or whether it was wrong, whether you did everything you were supposed to or you took a shortcut. You know, I try to tell people, because people always ask me the question. I said, if you're a 25-year-old kid, you got two kids at the house, you've been going from AAA to the big leagues, and this vial of steroids is going to make you a better baseball player and keep you in the big leagues. What are you going to do? And 100% of the people go, oh, I'm going to take that. But 20 minutes ago, you were arguing that, you know, oh, they shouldn't get this, they shouldn't do that. But I said, but now the situation is different when you get thrown into it. So every circumstance is different. Is it fair? No. Did it happen? Absolutely. Was it as rampant as, you know, the media makes it seem? No. You know, nobody's sitting there with a syringe and steroids walking around the clubhouse, you know, shooting up in front of people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing that people, you know, people think that, oh, it was like it was, you know, the 1980 drug tour. I mean, it's not like that. You know, people know, hey, I got to hide this. You know, if not, then they're going to think certain ways. But a lot of these guys, I think, will be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know when, but I think that they will be. I'm over here looking at one of my puppies. But that, you know, he's upstairs looking at me going.
It's your puppy.
No, my puppy. He's a 110 pound rot. He's just looking at me. But no, he just, you know, I think these guys will be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think that, you know, as the further we get away from when it happened, I think that some guys who, you know, because I don't have a vote for the Hall of Fame. So it's up to those guys to figure out if they want to do it or not. But I do believe that, you know, the people that are being talked about will get in.
Yeah, I think that the people that we're talking about too, like you said, I mean, they were Hall of Famers before, you know, before even, you know, steroids really kicked up and was really used, you know, at an exponential rate necessarily or whatever. But I think that the reality is that, you know, to me, you can't just ignore the history too. You know, the history of it too was just part of history, and especially if that pitcher and that hitter are both doing it potentially, you know, the reality is, you know, that it's affecting the game. And you never want to cheat the game, but if, you know, that's just the reality of what kind of was going on. And I think that to, you know, say it's this guy who, you know, or that guy, you know, is not in the Hall of Fame is kind of crazy to me. One person I think that should be in the Hall of Fame, this is my personal opinion, but is Pete Rose, for example. I think Pete Rose is just a guy that, you know, had that many hits. And this is fascinating to think about. Like, the person who had that many hits and not be in the Hall of Fame is just baffling to me. What are your thoughts on Pete Rose?
Well, I love Pete. I think, you know, with the situation with him, I think he will get in the Hall of Fame. I think that, you know, I think that they're going to let him pass before they allow him in. I just think that they don't want him to have that speech to be able to talk about it. That's my personal opinion. Growing up watching Pete, my dad loves him to death. I think what happened is, as you're a hitter, as a player, you do something as a manager, you know, I think that they should be separated. Mm-hmm. I think it should be what he did as a player, he didn't do as a hitter, but I'm not the commissioner of baseball. You know, I wasn't, you know, privileged to some of the information that was given. But I do believe that eventually he'll get in. I just think that they're going to wait for him to pass, you know, before they allow it.
Before we get to the next little 2-minute drill we're going to do, we always do this 2-minute drill, which I think you're going to love. I love 2 minutes left in the game. And so we're going to have this little fun game that Jeff's going to take us through. But two questions, you know, that I would have for you is, who has the best swing besides you, who would you say has the best swing of all time hitting the baseball?
We'll go with Bellinger and Cano.
Bellinger and Cano, smooth swingers. Yeah, those are good. I was thinking you were going to say a Bonds or something like that, but Bellinger's a good one. Bellinger's the top of his game, and also Cano. Cano was so effortless in how beautiful he swung the bat. You know, he just did it so he could hit anything, any pitch at any moment. I felt like. And the last question I had before we go, you know, your relationship with Alex, and I remember watching you two guys play in Seattle, and I remember actually his bat broke and him handing, you handing him your bat, and just what was that relationship like? And obviously two amazing baseball players and competitors,
that was my bat in the first place.
Oh, that was your bat in the first place.
Yeah, I was mad because he broke my bat.
So I always thought that was his bat. Then they try to check his bat.
The bat that they checked when he played against Baltimore. We were playing against Baltimore, yeah. and they checked it for being
corked.
Corked. It was funny because it's my bat, and what they were trying to do is play head games because he was hitting like 400 against them. Mm-hmm. So they were like, "Oh, he's a young kid. Let's play head games. Blah blah blah. Let's check his bat. Let's try to get him out of a rhythm." I was like, "All right, here go my bat. Take it." And he goes deep with that.
Rattle.
Yeah, and he just started laughing because I said some things over today, dugout. if you look at the video, I mouthed some nice words. But no, again, it's one of those guys that you know, if you're one of the best guys in baseball, you don't have to be jealous. And, you know, my dad was never jealous of what Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez.
Rest in peace.
He was never jealous of those guys. So he brought that type of attitude to me in my house. Is if you want it, you can work for it. You don't have to be jealous. Obviously, they got it, so you can get it. So that's the whole thing about if you want something, work for it. It ain't going to be given to you. You just want somebody to give it to you. No, that ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, well,
my first helmet was a Reach football helmet. My dad was like, "I'm not buying you no Rydell. You don't deserve it yet."
your dad and your mom were both pushing you a competitor, which I love. But you know, that's how Sierra is. That's how I am with our kids. Is just trying to make sure that they understand they have to work for everything. Especially once you've been successful, when you have parents that are successful too, I think something that's so important that you establish. And it's cool hearing your thought process on viewpoints of a guy like Alex Rodriguez, who was such an amazing baseball player. I think, he was one of my favorites to ever watch, just how he played shortstop. He had so much range and ability and hit. He could hit for power and hit for consistency and just he could really do it all. Has such a strong arm, just an amazing pure athlete. So I've got to know
Alex. Yeah, I'd get mad at him, tell him like, "Hey man, you got to get more balls. I'm 5 years older than you. You got to cover more ground." And he's looking at me like, "What?" I'm like, "I'm just kidding." But, it's fun when you have, like I said, you have a kid who can go out and play and you get a front row seat every day to watch somebody play. And, at his level, it was fun to watch.
Would you say he's the best, one of the best players you've ever played with?
Yeah.
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 I mean, he was
top two.
Yeah. Jeff, you have your Mount Rushmore question. You want to ask Ken what he would say about his Mount Rushmore?
I would love to. I would say that Junior's Mount Rushmore is Rich Amaral, Darren Bragg, Luis Soho, and Valley. But you're going to correct me if I'm wrong. Griffey, what's your Mount Rushmore of teammates?
Ooh, Mount Rushmore of teammates. Jay Buhner.
Archimedes Pozo. Okay, Jay Buhner.
Edgar, Adam Dunn,
two Mariners. I like it already. Okay, the big donkey.
Barry Larkin.
Barry Larkin was amazing.
Ooh, that's a good bet.
And then
good
who would you say the greatest, the Mount Rushmore of baseball players of all time, in your viewpoint?
Jackie Robinson.
You're up there, Griffey.
Willie Mays, Hank Aaron.
And Junior.
Willie Stargell. And why I picked Willie, because he actually taught me how to play the outfield when I just got drafted.
Really? Wow.
Everybody thinks he's a first baseman and blah, blah, blah. He played outfield. He taught me how to – what foot to go on. Here's how to catch the ball. Because I only played 2 years – I played 2 years of high school baseball, and I only played, like, basically 2.5 years of center field before I was drafted. I was a pitcher first baseman.
That's crazy.
Up until I was 14, 15.
Why did you play first base as athletic as you are?
Left-handed. Can't play.
Tall,
lefty. They didn't put you in the outfield earlier on?
Nah, I want to go out there. Nobody hit the ball back. You know, where they put all the good athletes when you start off in the infield?
Yeah, you put them in the infield.
Then they put all the athletes in the outfield. Now, they don't really say that. You know, they give you this, oh, the infielders are better, you know, when you're an infielder. But the outfielder is where you want to be.
Yeah.
Because you can pick your top five infielders, and I could pick my top five outfielders, and y'all wouldn't stand a chance.
No chance.
<Mm-mm>.
Well, so let's that was awesome. And so what would you – Jeff, are you ready to do this little two-minute drill? Okay.
Oh, I'm ready. So the two-minute drill, Greg.
Go ahead and tell me how to do this thing here.
All right, I'm going to have to ask you rapid-fire questions for 2 minutes. Nobody better that two-minute drill than my man, Russell Wilson. And so for our segment, what we do is we do a two-minute drill where we give you rapid-fire questions, and you just have to answer as quick as you can. It's always going to be you first, our guest, and then Russ is going to answer second. He doesn't know what I'm going to bring up. So I'm going to give you 2 minutes, and then we'll rock. You ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. 2 minutes on the clock. What do you prefer, a home run or a home run robbery?
Home run robbery.
I prefer a home run just because I can't probably even rob one.
All right, if you're going to have a cheat meal, do you want pizza or a hamburger? Griff, I know you like barbecue, but we're doing pizza or hamburger.
Pizza.
Go on, pizza.
Okay. Favorite city to hit a home run and for Russ, throw a touchdown.
Seattle
for sure. But if I'm gonna go a road game, I always like playing New York. I like New York just because we won Super Bowl there.
If I had to pick, I love that answer. Griffin, hit us with your road city.
It's New York.
Look at that. Griffin and I are the same page, baby. Seattle, New York.
West Coast or East Coast? Go.
West Coast.
West Coast.
All right, 1 minute left. Do you like the movie Little Big League or The Rookie?
Little Big League.
I'm going The Rookie.
Okay. When you think about your life, baseball or golf?
Baseball.
I think about baseball.
Okay. It's happy to hear that, Griffey, that you said baseball. All right. Designated hitter or let the pitchers hit? Go.
DH.
DH for sure. I think you get more fun out of the game.
Okay. Stolen base or do you like a base knock?
Oh, a base hit.
Okay.
Oh, look, we talked about that earlier. You mentioned the 95 slide. I'm still sliding. I've told Edgar plenty of times that I need him to hit the ball out of the ballpark. I wouldn't have to see myself slide every year around playoff time.
I'm gonna go with a stolen base. I like stealing on the pitcher and get on the and on the catcher too.
Yeah, but you got to get on base first.
Well, of course, but we're talking about home runs.
Time's up. That's 2 minutes.
No, you got to get on base.
Yeah, it's true.
You can't steal first base.
Hey, you know, maybe I got walked. They intentionally walked me, Junior. They intentionally walked me. You know.
Go ahead.
Do you know that the Mariners in 95, for a lot of us, we didn't get to watch you play in the other thing. That was the first time we realized Griffey had wheels. We were like, oh my God, he's fast.
Oh, they don't stick center fielder. You don't play center fielder if you're not fast.
We knew you were fast. My point is we watched you hit dingers and we watched you run down and steal home runs, but we were like, oh my God, this dude is fast as heck. All right, this is overtime question.
Hold on.
We're moving on. I offended my hero.
No. I will tell you this. My wife did say, I didn't know you could run that fast.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We watched you. We were like, it was so fast.
You cannot show that all the time. It's like an afterburner in a jet. You can't leave it on all the time.
All right, this is an overtime question. Will the Mariners make the playoffs in 2021? I'm going to ask both of you.
I'm hoping. Is that an answer?
That's an answer. That's how I feel every year.
I'm hoping.
I'm going to be optimistic. Is that an answer?
I'm hoping for the player's sakes and also the fans. I think, 20 years is long enough to not be in the playoffs. Do I think some things have to change? Absolutely. Do I think, guys, with a little more experience are going to be okay? Yes, they are. But 2021 might be a little tough. Because I still think they're just so young.
Well, speaking about young, obviously they have potential rookie of the year. I don't think they've given out the award yet. I've been in a film room all day, but talk to me about the new rookie of the Mariners. What do you think about him? Do you think he should win rookie of the year, Junior?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Hey, Lou.
Kyle's a great kid. He's unbelievable. He hurt his knee. Got a chance to talk to him. Making sure that he was okay. He's a good, solid kid. I think people have to realize when you're a young kid, you'll do anything to get back on the field. As a veteran, you're like, this ain't right. I'm taking my time, blah, blah, blah. But as a rookie, or as a young kid, you'll do anything to get back there. So if somebody tells you as a young kid, I'm just not feeling right, believe him, because he wants to get out there. And, when he got out there, he showed, the people in Seattle that he could play and Major League Baseball that he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, he's a special player, man. I love watching him. I just like how he reminds me of how hard you played the game. He seems like he's going 100% every play. Every pitch, every moment, he gives it all. And I think, to be honest with you, we've lost that in sports as a whole. We've lost that, that kind of old school approach of just, chasing down balls. And one guy I love watching too is Mike Trout. I think he plays the game in an old school way too, how he goes after the ball as well when the ball's in the air. But, what is your thought on that?
I feel the same way. There's so many things like for me, the analytics get thrown into all these equations and how they're going to draft a player. And I tell everybody, human heart and human error, you can't measure that. And I said, the most embarrassing walk in baseball isn't after you fly out. It's after you strike out and you walk back to the dugout and put your helmet in the helmet rack and your bat in the bat rack and you walk past your teammates. That's the most embarrassing walk. Nowadays, they don't care. 140, 200 strikeouts. They're like, hey, look at me. Yeah, I'm like, no, that's not what the object is, to put the ball in play. Good things happen when the ball's in play.
Yeah, so true.
You may not get a hit, but it may take a bad hop. You may get on base. You may help the next guy. I mean, certain things. That happened that we're losing sight of, because they look at analytics and go, it's an out. So what? No, it's not. It's not out. There's such thing as a productive out. If I go up there and swing, in three strikes, it's an out. But if I go in there and give you a 10 pitch at bat, that gives your team a chance to see the guy and you to be able to time him. So that's what, a lot of things that, frustrate me about the game today is that, people look at it and go, oh, it's just an out. No, it's not an out.
Yeah.
I want productive outs. I want my guys, yes, to make productive outs. Everybody's going to make an out. You know, there's no way of getting around that. But I want my guys to the other team to know, like, man, that was a battle. I don't want to do this again. And you're going to win more games with that attitude.
Well, I love that. And I love the fact that you care so much about how the game's played and the process of the game, because I think that, you know, something that I've always been super passionate about is, you know, how we play the game and what the tone that we set for our other teammates and, you know, some kid that's watching me. Because I know when I watched you play, you know, Junior, when I was a young kid, you know, obviously you had the swag and you had the swing and you had all that, but your effort and how you went after the ball, laid out for balls, and how you robbed home runs and how excited you got when you robbed a home run, that feeling, the emotion that after every time you did it, you had that big old smile and just you really cared about the game and how you played it and you cared about your teammates, which has been something that I've always thought that I knew about you. But to have you on Danger Talk and listen to you talk about it has always been is really, really cool for me, just as I'm in the middle of my career and as I watch your legacy and what you mean as a true king of Seattle and the things that you've done and just the true legend of the game. You know, it's inspiring to me when I was young and it's inspiring to me now. And hopefully I can transfer that.
You know, you look at a couple of weeks ago, DK, little incident at the goal line. You went up there and talked to him and you went right back to him.
Yeah.
That, you know, that shows that, you know, for that you're willing to go in there and say, all right, we go forgive him, forget that play, you know, but I'm gonna need you to get back in and do the things. And then the drive last week, you know, down the sideline and then in the end zone, how he, you know, we were talking about that. I was more impressed with the touchdown because he caught it and he rolled.
Yeah.
You know, most people don't understand, you know, they catch it and they just fall down. He actually rolled on top of it to keep it, you know, from touching the ground. So, you know, we watch these things. I got, you know, a wide receiver, you know, with Trey, you know, and I got a little defensive back. So, you know, this is a battle at the house. But, you know, for you to go in there and, you know, the camera's going to be on him, for you to come up there and take some of the pressure off of him and say, hey, we got this. Don't, you know, let that play go. It's a learning experience, and we can move forward. You know, that says a lot about you and your character and you know, that the organization's on the right foot and, you know, leading with you guys leading.
Well, you know, first of all, Junior, you mean the world to me. I think you're exactly right on that part of it. And you just inspired me in so many ways when I was a young kid, and just you're still inspiring me now. And, you know, the last thing I'll say to you before we take off here and let you go back to your golf game, you know, is one of the things that I've always been super passionate about is doing good and continue to give back. And we have this whole campaign, the Everyday Hero campaign, where my clothing line, Good Man Brand, we give clothes away to somebody that's been really an amazing hero. Has somebody been a hero to you that we can look out for? We donate from the Wynette U Foundation to all the proceeds to Friends of the Children. And so I want to give a little something to somebody that's meant something to you that's been a hero for you. Who's that hero for you?
It'd be my dad.
Yeah. All right. Well, Pops is going to get some Good Man Brand his way.
But I mean, you know, but if I were to, I mean, it's definitely my dad as far as heroes. I'm just looking to.
And it's good to be your dad. Your dad obviously meant a lot to you, so.
Oh, yeah. I tell him all the time that I kept him in the big leagues for six extra years the way he beat my butt. turn on inside fastball. No, I'm just kidding. But, no, I mean, I, you know, it's for charity and things like that. Wow.
Well, we're gonna donate to Friends of the Children. So you're by saying your dad, he's given to so many people. He's given to people like me, but he's given to so many other young kids who've looked up to you and to your dad. So he's always been given, and so that's why we want to give him a little special gift. We're gonna shoot you something too for being on the show with us, and just let you know that we're grateful for you being a hero in so many different ways. Not just by the way you swung the bat, but also what you mean to so many people. And to be honest with you, a young black kid from Richmond, Virginia, that had a dream and had a hope and had a goal and had a mission, and just you gave me hope and belief that I could do it. And I'm grateful for that. Yeah. So,
you know, it's funny. Is you born in Virginia?
Yep. I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio. I moved to Virginia when I was two. I was born in Cincinnati. Yeah.
Well, my wife was born in Norfolk, Virginia. And then moved out to Ghana with the Coast Guard. Her dad was in the Coast Guard, and we ended up in Seattle.
Well, crazy thing is,
so that's why I want.
Crazy thing is, my grandfather was the president of Norfolk State. Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah, small world.
It's a small world.
It really is. It really is. But listen, man, it's an honor. I can't wait to get back on the golf course with you and have some fun. And I know.
Oh yeah. Look. Yeah, we'll make it after you win the Super Bowl. You do the Disney trip. See, with Disney, I'm right here.
Right,
you
here.
Catch it right there. Yeah.
All right.
You don't even got to stay at the. You can stay at the house. I got a spot.
As long as I can have one of them gold gloves in my room, sitting in my room with the Lombardi
trophy.
I'll make
sure it's right there. Yeah, I'll put it right there for you.
All right, I love it, man. Well, listen, I'm grateful for you. Thanks for being on Danger Talk. You mean the world to us.
All
this is
right,
a Seattle legend, the best to ever play the game in baseball, arguably, and just you changed the game of baseball for so many people, for so many kids like myself. I know you changed Jeff Dye's vision of what he could do and if he could just be a baseball player or a comedian, but I ended up being a comedian.
That's true. I feel bad. If Griffey wasn't born, he would have gotten to sign his name. Or if I wasn't born, he'd have been able to sign his name 5,000 less times. I have his autograph like a billion times. I feel guilty about it.
It's okay. I'll let you slide on that.
You're a legend.
Yeah, you're a legend.
You're a
true legend. I'm just grateful for you having on Danger Talk. That's the one and only, Ken Griffey Jr., y'all. Seattle legend. Griff, thank you, man. Woo! Thanks for joining us, 2-4.
Come on. Thank you.
I appreciate you, man. It means the world to me. It's been really cool just to think about all the people that we've had and just how they've impacted their sport, their field, their world, and how they've been inspired by somebody else. That's what I love about it, and that's what I love about the Everyday Hero part, and that's what I love. Just love about who have you been inspired by. I think for anybody to be successful, you're inspired by somebody. And I think what I love most about that interview was when I really think about Junior talking about obviously his dad and just the greatness that they both were able to stash. And his dad even calling him and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to come and you okay if I come play with you? His dad asking his son that, and just his dad throwing ball with him in the outfield while they're playing the big leagues, and just that moment of father-son. But what I loved about
it
too was thinking about the Hank Aarons and the Willie Mayses of the world showing up at his house and mentoring him, and Ricky Henderson, and just, you know, it's fascinating just to think about, you know who Ken Griffey Jr. is as a person, what he meant to the game, and who he got inspired by. And that's what I love about some of the conversations we've had with Shaq and John David Washington, and like I said, Randy Moss and Chris Paul and Candace Parker. They've all been inspired by somebody. And I think for any young person or any kid or anybody listening to this, to be honest with you, is there somebody out there that you can get inspired by? And hopefully some of our guests can inspire you. And I can't wait for next week's guest, because next week is going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But we just finished up with Ken Griffey Jr. A little background on Ken Griffey Jr. again. He was November 21st, 1969. You know, nicknamed Junior, the kid, bad at lefty, threw lefty, but can make every play. But his career history, Major League debut, this is amazing information. Major League Baseball debut, April 3rd, 1989, for the Seattle Mariners. Last Major League Baseball appearance, May 31st, 2010, for the Seattle Mariners. And just played, you know, batting average 284, 2,781 hits, home runs, 630 home runs, and all the awards. And I could read this whole list, all the dang awards, but just, man.
And I think he's the, besides Jimi Hendrix, the only person to have a statue in Seattle. And I'm hoping the next statue is Russell Wilson. We could have a Russ, a Jimi Hendrix, and a KGJ.
Well, yeah, who knows, you know, but 2-4, man, he's a special player and a special friend too. And so, and a good golfer too. So Junior, thank you, man, for joining us. And we had DK join us too today. That was pretty cool. You know, a little surprise visit with the Madden 99 club. I'm like super hyped right now. I had Junior today. I feel like the kid did. I got my hat backwards. I'm on the 99 club. All those Madden fans out there, we're doing this thing. You know, and so we're here, you know. DK Metcalf surprised me here. That was pretty cool. And so we had mean, we had the kid on the show. So what a blessing. And bye week this week. And I'll see you guys next week. I cannot wait for you guys to see who we got next week. It's going to be a surprise. It's going to be fun. And we can't wait for you guys to join us. Should we tell them who it's going to be, or maybe we should wait?
You want to tell them?
We've never done that. We'll keep it consistent for now.
Because you know, I know, and we both know it's a big one. But every week's been a big one. We've got
to ask our producer, Max. So, are we allowed to tell him right now? Daniel, are we allowed to tell him? Yay, nay? Let us know. All right, all right, all right, all right, all right.
Leave it at that.
We'll tell him. We'll give him a little hint. Matthew McConaughey is showing up next week. So we can't wait to see you guys. He's a legend. And I've got so much insight. So we're fired up. He's a big football fan, big Texas fan. But we'll see you guys next week. Matthew McConaughey and Danger Talk, episode 6. Ken Griffey Jr. just finished. Episode 7, Matthew McConaughey coming next week. We love you guys and we're super grateful. And just stay the course, keep believing. And let's go Hawks, baby. Thank you guys so much for listening to Danger Talk with Russell Wilson and my co-host Jeff Dye. Make sure you guys subscribe every Wednesday. We'll be right here for you guys with a great guest every week during the football season.